Welcome back to Cut the Chat Life Science Insider Podcast, Season 2, Episode 2, hosted by Seuss Plus CEO and co-founder Sabina Hutchison. Cut the Chat promises to facilitate the conversations you've been dying to hear and tackle the real crux of our industry's challenges. So let's get today's episode started. Let's get to it. Let's cut the chat.
So Kirsten Dietrich is a biotech and pharma leader who's known for commercializing new therapeutics and shaping drug pipelines for major firms like Amgen, Bristol-Myers Squibb, and Takeda. She's led or launched four blockbuster therapeutics, including Entyvio, Enbrel, Prolia, and Plavix. And when added together, these drugs delivered over $26 billion in total peak sales to their respective companies. Currently, she's a global partner at Solensia, where she leverages her strategic and technical expertise on behalf of emerging biotechs that are preparing for commercialization and launch. And in addition to all this, she's an adjunct professor at the Dartmouth College Tuck School of Business. She serves as a trade representative who helps companies expand to Switzerland, and she's the CEO of two stealth biotech startups. And where she and I first met, she's a former representative of the Healthcare Business Women's Association Rising Star Award and is a sought-after public speaker and advisor. And I'm thrilled to have the dynamic Kirsten with me today. It's such a pleasure to have you on the podcast today. So thanks for coming. And I have to think, as I was reading through your bio, how we first met when you were in Austria, actually, right?
That's right.
Yeah. And you were with the HBA. So I'm so happy about the HBA because it's led to me meeting you plus so many other fantastic people. It's such a great networking opportunity, isn't it? That wonderful HBA organization.
It really is. The HBA is just a fantastic group, and I've had the benefit since I have lived and worked both in Europe and in the United States to see the organization on both sides of the pond. So it's a great pleasure to be invited. Thank you for the kind invitation, Sabina. I'm thrilled to be on Cut the Chat with you today.
We've had lots of conversations. So I'm glad today we're finally able to record some of the ideas and some of the topics that we've discussed over coffee. So now we're just going to share some of these thoughts and ideas for some of the biotech industry, which we support obviously at Zeuss, as do you. And today we're going to focus on the commercialization side of biotech, aren't we? Although many biotechs think, I don't need to focus on this aspect of the business because I'm going to sell my asset or potentially partner with another organization to commercialize the project. But we want to take a bit of a different look at that. And so I'm really happy to have you here today to do that. And, you know, I guess that leads us into kind of the first question is that, you know, why is it so crucial that biotechs actually do think about prioritizing commercialization strategies? And really from the beginning, you know, the early stages into their entire product development pipeline.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny. You say you hear from biotech, whether they're founders or leaders, like, oh, I don't have to worry about this. I have been in so many meetings where I'll hear the head of discovery or development literally say that, those exact words. Well, I'm going to exit. I don't need to worry about commercialization. Or I'm going to find a great partner who's going to do that for me. And the thing about that is that approach sub-optimizes all of the blood, sweat, and tears that the scientists have put into developing a particular asset. And, you know, it sort of makes me a bit sad, you know, when I hear that, because what a company is setting itself up for, if they haven't properly prepared for the commercialization stages, they're just, you know, leaving themselves open to whatever the other side wants to do. They don't have the sophistication, they don't have the understanding, they don't have the depth of knowledge that it takes to be able to frankly negotiate for the highest value for the asset that is, you know, currently being discussed for a possible out-licensing or an acquisition. And, you know, it's funny, I think of scientific discovery and development and commercialization as a relay race, right? So somebody is in the starting blocks of the molecule and they start racing and then they hand it off to development and then development hands it off to, you know, the next person in line and so on. And, you know, the point is to get across the finish line, and everybody, the whole team has to get across the finish line. If commercialization is not included in the team, you're not going to stick the landing. You're not going to, you know, win the race. You sort of run halfway around the track and then you just completely lose steam. And I think that's a real dangerous place for biotech startups to be, quite frankly.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you've already mentioned some of the risks that are associated with that. Maybe you can bring some of the experiences that you've seen and even some examples, you know, where companies haven't. I think also it's so important to look at commercialization as, you know, it's like this one dynamic we often think about, and it's about launching. But there's so much more to commercialization. And it would be great. Do you have any examples, or have you had any discussions or experiences with some of the biotechs or even some of the organizations that you worked for have actually purchased assets in? So what are the dynamics around that?
Well, what really happens, I think, is that you have incredibly brilliant scientific minds that come together, and they kind of don't understand what commercialization is. And there's sort of two views of commercialization. It's just a black box and nobody understands it. It's super complicated. And that's not my area of expertise. Or, oh, that's so easy, commercialization. I've created an incredible molecule. This thing is just going to sell itself, and everybody around the world is going to recognize how important this is, which couldn't be further from the truth, right? I mean, unfortunately, biotech is a hyper-competitive industry, and I have worked with organizations that, you know, in one example, a company didn't even have a TPP. They were a target product profile, right, which is sort of the full list of every attribute and the benefits that, you know, come with those attributes or those features of the drug. They didn't really understand beyond, well, we've got a great mechanism of action. Mm-hmm. Our mechanism of action is completely different than anything else on the market. Nobody is going to prescribe a therapeutic just because it has a different MOA. They'll prescribe it because it's got better efficacy as defined by it works faster, it lasts longer, it's it delivers a higher safety benefit. There's lots of differentiating benefits, but unless you actually write them down and then, quite frankly, test them with the various stakeholders that will be exposed to your drug, you're really running the race blind. It's not a relay race anymore. You're literally tying a blindfold around you, your eyes, and you're just kind of running down the track, and you don't even know if you're on the track anymore.
Right. And, you know, the TPP you mentioned is, you know, that's a key piece. I think when you're in a large pharmaceutical, that's kind of the Bible, isn't it? Or that document is taken very seriously and completed and worked on throughout the life cycle of the development of the molecules. And I think that so often that from the biotech space, that they maybe just cut out certain pieces of that they think potentially are going to be beneficial or needed.
Yeah.
And if they do that, which I, you know, also you can understand a bit, you know, what pieces are the most crucial. So if you were to look at a TPP and say, all right, they definitely need to focus on these areas, what would you suggest?
I think the most important thing with building a TPP is you've really got to be comprehensive, and it's critical to get it complete and go well beyond what you as a scientific leader might think is necessary. Mm-hmm. For example, I hear all the time from development pros, oh, well, you know, we have a better delivery system. Mm-hmm. We're oral instead of injectable, or we're injectable instead of infusible. And those are certainly important convenience benefits. But quite frankly, what's being lost in the conversation is that payers, really, they don't pay for convenience. That's not something that they're interested in. And so this is something that I think most startups, they have blinders on. They think it's only about, you know, what they see from their view. And they're not able to necessarily open themselves up to the view of their stakeholders. And that's what's so critical. The company you mentioned that I'm a global partner in, Silentia, we work to align stakeholder views and see, you know, even if we, before we do the alignment, to see, are they aligned at all? I mean, you know, if there is in the United States, for example, if there's an incentive for physicians to be infusing a therapeutic and a more convenient oral comes along, that is maybe more convenient for the patient, but loses that incentive for the physician, you know, there might not be aligned incentives in the marketplace. And all of those understandings, all of that work needs to be done well earlier than, you know, phase three. You need to be really taking a commercialization view at phase one and really starting to shape your target product profile comprehensively at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So agree. Because again, this goes to, you know, I think in one of our previous conversations as well, we were talking about asset value. And that's really what the goal of this is, isn't it? Regardless of commercializing a product yourself or with a partner or a potential exit.
Completely agree with that. And I think that's the thing that we kind of, as small startup biotechs, can forget. We sort of say, well, as I said earlier, the science sells itself. It doesn't. And the value, the way I think about it as a commercialization expert is, I stand on the shoulders of the years and years and, you know, of contributions of incredible scientists. And my job is to optimize the value of the molecule I'm working on because it reflects the value that they put into developing and discovering that molecule. The challenge is if you don't have a commercialization person on your team, you're probably going to leave yourself open to a situation where you're going into a negotiation with a large pharma who knows a lot more about the category than you do, who, you know, may actually have a view on your commercialization expertise or lack thereof that reduces the value they're willing to pay you for your exit. Or if you're out licensing, you know, you want to be in a sophisticated position. You want to know everything around the whole chain of contributions all the way through to, you know, not just that the science is great, but, you know, why will physicians use this? Why would patients like this? How will payers view this? Mm-hmm. And having that view optimizes the value that you'll get out of any out-licensing opportunity, because that's part of what you can sell to your future partner.
Yeah. So kind of going back to, if you were to give around the TPP, if you were to give advice to a biotech, either that's starting or potentially have already started, say phase one or phase two, what would you suggest for them to do around that and around the creation of that?
First thing to do is to get your entire team to sit down and make contributions to, it's an actual like format that you can use. And you write in for every single component of the TPP, you know, what are the efficacy endpoints? What are the secondary endpoints? What is the safety parameters? How is it delivered? Do you have any value components in terms of payer value? Mm-hmm. Will this therapeutic actually enable payers to remove another therapeutic from a patient's total drug load? Mm-hmm. Every single possible benefit gets literally written down in sort of a format. And then the next thing you do is you take that out to the various stakeholders and you test it and you say, huh, what's the response to this? You know, I worked with an organization recently that was working in the space and they had something pop on their TPP with physicians that they completely didn't expect was going to be a real benefit. And what they heard from physicians was, hey, this is a critical component of me knowing that long-term, this therapeutic is going to resolve a particular, in this case, gastrointestinal downstream sequelae of a disease. And that sort of healing benefit was really, really important to physicians. And the company had been thinking, well, actually, you know, what's really important is just that we're, you know, 40% better at this particular endpoint than our competitors, when in fact, it was actually more of a secondary endpoint that actually got, you know, the attention. So testing from the very beginning, not just what you have, but what you want to build. So if you're in phase one, you should be going out there, you know, the word target is intentional. It's what do you want to deliver? It's not necessarily, you know, the what I've already gotten the, you know, in the can product profile. So you want to be building and designing your therapeutic toward a specific target. You know, in the big pharma space, you know, theoretically, if a product doesn't deliver on that target product profile, the product is the therapeutic is shelved, because that's what you're trying to achieve. Mm-hmm. That's the target.
Absolutely. And also, I think a key piece, I was speaking with someone actually from J&J some time ago, and they were talking about how important this TPP is for their products as well. And also looking at the competition, you know, what's going on, that this is also something that happens during the life cycle. It's not, you don't just do it in the beginning and look what's out there, but it's so crucial to look at that through the entire product development phase as well to see what's happening.
Yeah, in fact, what is best practice is building a TPP for your competitive therapies that are already in the space, but also the ones that are in the pipeline, mm-hmm. and get a sense of, okay, where is this market going to go in the next 2 to 5 years? And how does my product, you know, position itself in that future market?
Yeah.
That's something that's a pretty sophisticated way to see how your product is going to fare in the real world.
And do you see that also as being beneficial? So for instance, when you're in the clinical trial phase as well, again, because a lot of, you know, we hear a lot, we have companies come to us as well, struggling with patient recruitment. So I'm also assuming that can also help when you're looking at going into the, working in the clinic to see, okay, who's out there and who am I competing against, again, for patients in clinical trials?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the toughest things, you know, today in development is getting patient enrollment and delivering on your target patient enrollment from a clinical operations perspective and understanding, you know, huh, are patients going to be interested in this? During your trial, that's really a cogent comment, Sabina, because I think that can really help you understand, are my estimates of clinical trial enrollment probably, are they overestimated? Are they underestimated? Mm-hmm. You can get a sense of how vibrant and interested patients are in your product by exposing them to a TPP.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, so super critical piece in the development process. You know, we talk a lot about asset value and how crucial this actually thinking about commercialization early on is. And I'm really curious to understand, because you've obviously worked for large pharmaceutical companies who've acquired assets from biotechs, and curious to hear, what does that process look like? So when you are evaluating potential assets to acquire, you know, what are some of the criteria, the asset or the molecule, and how much of the commercialization potential is evaluated during that process?
I would argue that that process is all about the commercialization value. So, you know, I think what happens is not, you know, if you're a startup and you don't have anybody who's got experience in let's say big pharma, you might have a perception that the way this works is you go to the business development leadership of a company and you talk to them about the science and, you know, they make a decision. And that couldn't be further from the truth. The way it works is that a business development individual is the figurehead, the spear, you know, the tip of the spear. They convene a cross-functional team of people internally at the pharmaceutical organization, which includes, yes, development scientists, CMC experts, you know, maybe tox experts. But what they're also adding in are commercial people, which include experts in physician marketing capabilities, the payer experts on, well, what kind of price will this asset be able to command in the marketplace, market research people. So you really have a big team on the pharma side, you know, that can be up to 10 or 12 people. And then those 10 or 12 people, you know, sort of coalesce around what's our view of this molecule. And if their view is that the commercialization value is significant and it's, you know, worth the investment that we're thinking about, then you have to go up the next level and convince, you know, everybody, you know, up to potentially the CEO, depending on how big the opportunity might be. And all the while, big pharma, you know, that team is also assessing potentially other assets in your same space. So if you show up and you don't have a sophisticated view that matches the level of understanding of the people that you're at the negotiating table with, you are absolutely undervaluing your asset. You will not generate the value that you really should be commanding because you're kind of going in a little bit naive or maybe a little blind. And getting help is critical to making sure that you're generating the kind of, you know, upfront that you want, the kind of longer term payout that you're looking for, the milestones that are advantageous to you. All of those are things that, frankly, they're all contingent on how the commercialization group sees the potential. So getting through the development team is the first hurdle. Mm-hmm. It's not the last hurdle.
Can you give some examples? So I'm curious to hear some of the success stories. So some of the companies, what did they display and what did they do that took them to the top and increased their potential multiple as compared to others? Do you have anything that you can share there?
Yeah, I mean, I can't go into, you know, sort of confidential stuff, but there was a company that I worked on a team internally. It was myself and our development leader. I was the commercialization leader. And we led a group to assess a really, really exciting approach to dealing with pretty severe GI illness. That's one of my areas of specialty is GI. And quite honestly, the science was incredibly compelling, but there was a huge concern about the distribution capabilities of a drug that was a 24-hour shelf life. And how do you actually make this work in the real world? And so we brought in our manufacturing experts who drilled it, you know, hard into how is this actually going to work? And the startup was pretty sophisticated. And more importantly, they had mapped out how is this going to work. They didn't just wave their hands. They were very specific about this component of the commercialization process. And that really helped them generate a better value for their entrant. I think that's one example. I've also, you know, been on the pharma side where you've had a fairly unsophisticated group come in and, you know, we look internally at our team, we look at each other and we think, aha, this is actually pretty good science, but they don't really understand what they've got here. So we don't have to, you know, we don't have to give them the kind of valuation that they might actually deserve. They just don't even know how good it could be.
Super interesting. Of course, it can be devastating for an organization as well to win over. And would you say that the companies that potentially, maybe going back to this idea of the target product profile, I know we're focusing a bit on that today. Did the organizations also have a very comprehensive profile portfolio completed or not?
Their TPP, you can tell the ones that have actually done the work, they don't necessarily show it. They don't necessarily bring it to the meeting, but you can tell the way they talk about their asset in a truly 360 degree way. You can tell they've done the homework and they show up to the table ready, you know, ready to have a really, truly engaging conversation, not just with the clinical development group, but also with every cross-functional member of a commercialization team. They show up ready to play.
Nice. Wow, we've hit on a lot of topics today that are crucial for biotechs specifically to think about when they are putting their commercialization hat on in their development. And could you, or can you share with us, if you were to put together a list of top three areas that they should focus on, how would you prioritize those?
Terrific question. I think there's probably, I'll give you a bonus. I think I have four, actually. The first is really understanding how your product differentiates itself in the market. What is the benefit that your therapeutic offers to the marketplace? How well anchored is that? How well understood is that? How is that valued or not in the marketplace? So, I mean, here's an example. I was recently advising a company and I was looking at their website. It was a new engagement. And their website is really, it's kind of slick. It's you know, it grabs you visually, except all they discuss is the mechanism of action of their therapeutics. They don't tell me, why should I care? You know, what is this going to do for me as a physician?
The so what,
you know, getting to what is the benefit? I think this is one of the things that biotechs can miss often, is they sort of jumble up a feature with a benefit, you know, and I guess the best way, I don't know if I can come up with a good example, but, you know, if the feature is, you know, my mechanism of action is, it works in a certain way, well, okay, that's great. That's the what, you know, or the how. Tell me the what. I want to know, what are you going to do for me? Oh, you know, you're going to work faster. You're going to work twice as fast as the competition, or you're going to last longer, or you're going to increase, you know, the rate of remission. You're going to, you know, all of those markers that are meaningful, you know, the benefit is what you're looking for. And I think that's tough for biotechs because they get wrapped up in the science and they don't sort of simplify and just bring it up a level. Say, why should I care?
And communicate it clearly as well.
And communicate it clearly.
And that's true for so many organizations, isn't it? We know what we do well, but it's the communication piece that a lot of us struggle with. Yeah. So good point.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's all about the, what's in it for me? You know, if I use this therapeutic, what's it going to do for me, whether I am the payer, the physician, or the patient? So I think differentiation is really, that is anchored in a meaningful benefit, is the first topic on my list. The second would be, what is your profile and how appealing is it to payers? And by the way, payers, you know, there's a huge difference between payers in the US and payers sort of in the rest of the world. But in either case, no matter what geography you're located on, that payer access question and balance is critical. Just because you think that this is, you know, a better mousetrap does not mean that a large payer or the government of, you know, when I was working in Austria, for example, you know, that the federal government in Austria is going to think that this is a high value therapeutic. And I think it's such a foreign concept to many early stage biotechs, even mid stage biotechs, that they want to learn, but it's almost like they're afraid to learn. You know, it's like, wow, this is scary. I don't understand it. It's completely outside my realm of, understanding and bringing in somebody that can help you, you know, sort of teach you what this is about, it's going to drive up the value of your asset. Because, you know, when you're asked the question from a big pharma, you know, what's the price that your therapeutic is going to command in the marketplace? And why do you think that's the price? And beyond the price, why do you think that a payer is going to be willing to carve out a certain portion of their budget to allocate to you? These are all the questions that you have to answer if you want to be competitive at the negotiating table. And number three would be competitiveness. Yeah. You know, I think that every biotech who's working in any particular category, whatever that category is looking to see what the competitors are doing in the pipeline, but really understanding and gaming out what they could do. What will their moves be? What strategies might the competition take? Not just monitoring their activity, but actually predicting it, you know, sort of working in a situation where you're building the possibilities, rating, you know, what the possibility, the probability of those moves would be, and then what would you do about it? And what would be the answer that you give to a potential partner or someone who's looking to in-license your therapy? What would be your answer to that? And then the fourth thing is that I'm not sure that every company is thinking on a global scale. They're often thinking, well, I'm going to keep the rights in the US and I'm going to give the rights away everywhere else. And I don't have to think about that. You know, no, you've got to think about the whole world and how you will, how this product will play everywhere. Even if you're not going to be the one responsible for that geography, you need to have enough knowledge about what's going on in that geography so that you can capably command the right price for your offering so that you can actually build a value proposition that appeals at every geography. What I see often is that this global mindset is sort of, you know, well, we're just going to worry about this geography right now. And we're not going to worry about, you know, another geography. That's just not our bailiwick. So those would be the three or four that I would list.
Fantastic. That the last one was really interesting because we're seeing that with a couple of companies that we're working with, because they're also thinking about commercializing themselves in one geography and then passing it on. But it's such a valid point that you do need to think about it as a holistic global approach.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Fantastic. Thank you so much. As always, I love having conversations with you and I could go on forever and ever.
Delightful. Really delighted to have a chat with you today, Savannah.
Yeah. Thanks for letting us record it. And I'm excited to share your insights also with the broader world. Great. And I look forward also looking at how we can potentially collaborate together also in the future. So I think really excited about that.
That would be great. All right. Well, thanks so much. Thanks. I guess we cut the chat. Huh?
We cut the chat and have a fabulous weekend coming up.
We hope you enjoyed this week's episode of Cut the Chat, Life Science Insider. Make sure you're following Seuss Plus on LinkedIn and be the first to know about upcoming podcasts. See you again soon.